Good morning. Oh, good afternoon. My name is Brenda and I'm a sex and love addict.
Hi, Brenda.
I'd like to welcome you to the healing of healing of shame and guilt. I said it wrong, but that's what I of the International SLAA Recovery Conference. Please join me in a moment of silence for all those people who still suffer, followed by the surrender prayer, which I already did. One, we admitted we were powerless over sex and love addiction and our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood God. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with a power greater than ourselves, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to sex and love addicts and to practice these principles in all areas of our lives. Okay, I'll start off. Well, I'm still Brenda. I'm still a sex and love addict. Before I came into this program, I was a sex and love addict without knowing it. And I love sex. And I didn't feel bad about it. I didn't know it was a problem. I didn't feel guilty about all the men that I had set up or manipulated or anybody along my past until my disease got progressive. And actually when I moved to Florida. Because in New York, everybody was exactly like me. Just, it was like one big city of all sex and love addicts. We all found each other. We all moved in the same circles. There was nothing wrong until I moved to Florida among all these rednecks and backwoods people and didn't fit in. And later on, after living down here for a while, I was a fish out of water. And I looked more deeply at myself and the things that I was doing. But of course, I didn't know that I was really doing anything wrong until I had the first car accident, which stopped me from doing what I was doing and made me sit and contemplate my life. And each car accident thereafter, because I always went back to doing all the things that I did, and there were five car accidents, I went back and did everything that I was used to doing. Going out to the bars, I was thin, I was cute, good personality. I would set up people. I would walk in, see my mark, go to it, and bring it home with me. No guilt, no shame. But I did think about it after each car accident because I was laid up for quite a while after each one. And my higher power, made this all happen. Everything that has happened in my life, from the abuse, from being sexually abused as a kid, were all meant to happen to me, which led me here. I did not start feeling any bad stuff about what I was doing until I was raped. First time I said no. I was always a yes girl. That's how I grew up. And later down the line, I put on weight. I didn't want the same attractive guys or intelligent. I just didn't care anymore. That's when the shame started coming into it and the guilt. I was setting up a different kind of person. I was less than. I had no self-esteem. I was setting up more people each day. Three the most. Four need be. The shame and the guilt and bad thoughts were taking over. Suicide was coming into focus more often. And it was dangerous. It was getting dangerous to live. Until I came into this program. After being in this program 5 years, I'm in 5 years, I was doing this program one day at a time because that's all I could do. I was afraid that I was going to give up my drug of choice. Sex and love was my drug of choice. Sex more than love, because I needed that feeling, that high, that adrenaline rush, that constant to make me live. The shame and the guilt did not start going away until I was in this program for 2.5 years. Being in it now for 5 years and feeling really good about myself, I feel great. I look back at my past with all the sex that I was doing as just something to look back on. I'm not ashamed of it because that's my past. I'm in my present now. In my future, I don't know what's going to hold. But as long as I keep doing what I'm doing now, I'm going to the right place. I have no guilt about all the setups that I did in the past, because that was the old me. I'm a new me now. The beautiful thing about it is that I felt so ashamed before coming in here that I didn't think I was going to live, because I thought about suicide all the time. There was nothing worthwhile to my life because the sex was in charge, the guilt, the shame. Everybody in my apartment complex I had set up. I still live there. They've all moved out. The thing is, though, I wouldn't be where I am today without this program or thinking so highly of myself. The old me couldn't do that. And I don't think I'd be around without this program. I don't have AIDS. I'm not a piece of shit anymore. I'm a person with a heart, a soul, a mind, and a body, and I don't use any of those things to get what I need anymore. The one thing that I'm working on this day is who I am, what I have to give back for what I got. And every time that I share or I give what I'm saying, it makes me feel stronger about who I am. It makes me feel better about what space I'm in right now. Because I don't think I'm ever going to go back to the way I was before. Because I've seen the ugliness and the beauty of it. I had a good time, but those good times, those sexual good times, were a drug, and I was filling a void in me that I don't have to fill up anymore except with this program. I'm a whole person, and I was less of a person before. I'm just grateful one day at a time that I have a higher power, and I've got the friends in this program that keep getting me through every day. I'm doing it not alone. And when the day comes that I think that I'm doing this alone is when I'm going to lose it. Thank you.
Thank you, Brandon.
Thanks, Brandon.
Who wants to share next?
Pass it around. I'm Carlos. I'm a sex and love addict.
Hi, Carlos.
Shame has been a very big part of my life for as long as I can remember. I don't believe any kid is born with shame or guilt. I think we learn shame. I've known since I can remember that I was different. And eventually I understood that difference to be that I'm gay. And everything in society for years told me that I was a pervert, that I was going to hell. And there was nothing I could do about it. I mean, there's just not anything that I did. It was what I was. And I tried to ignore it. I tried not to have any sexual feelings. I pleaded with God just to make sure I did not have any sense, any sexual feelings whatsoever. I would rather be a rock than feel that shame every time I saw a man and I found him attractive. And to make things worse, I come from a very religious family, very good family. But I bought everything they said, that the church said, and I entered the seminary and I became a priest, and I was right in the middle of it. And I went right to the source of what was providing me with that shame. I started drinking. I was doing drugs. Right in the rectory, I was smoking pot. And I would go out, look for hustlers. And it's taken me a long, long time and a lot of hours in therapy to put that aside. But I don't feel the guilt any longer. But I know that the shame is always right there, right behind me. And because right now it's in the news all the time. And every time some senator or some politician or general comes out and says that gays should not be in the military, part of me is telling me that I'm not good enough, that I couldn't do it. Everybody else can do it, but I can't. When I hear that gays and lesbians should not be able to be foster parents or adoptive parents, again, it's just that shame is right there, right behind me. And sometimes I feel like running away from it, just hiding, go to a place that, like Denmark. But that's not reality for me, and I have to learn how to deal with it. I think the program has allowed me to stay a few steps ahead of the shame right now, but I'm still running. It's not something that I have been able to stop and not let that shame, where people want to shame me, not to allow them to do that. And I'm not sure how long it's going to take, because that's been a very deep-seated part of me. I no longer accepted what other people said. I accepted it myself. I did it to myself. I couldn't look at myself in the mirror. And then I got contact lenses. I don't know. It's kind of odd, but I don't know. I know that I every time the subject comes up, I feel something inside of me that's the past trying to become the present, and then I get angry, and sometimes I not act proud, but I lash out at people, not in the most appropriate ways. And I'm still reacting. I'm still reacting to people, and I'm just hoping that that what this program can do for me is not let them dictate what I am and what I should feel. It's a bitch. It's not easy. It's not easy. It's something that it's with me 24 hours a day. It's not a day that goes by or an hour that goes by that I don't think about it. And I have to continually remind myself that it's not that way. The people in the program that I've known have been very helpful. And this conference has been, I wasn't sure about coming here and I was nervous about it, but so far it has been extremely helpful. I just need to, and just need to hear the other tapes more often than the ones that society in general has given me. And I know next year with this new proposal to amend the state constitution, it's going to be a lot in the news throughout the state. And I'm projecting instead of just taking things as they are today. As you can gather, something that bothers me. It's something very real, and I hope to listen to other tapes and get new tapes so I can stop running from it. I don't want to keep running from it. I want to be able to say no and let it be at that. But that's not going to be easy. Thanks.
Thanks, Carlos.
Hi, my name's Art, recovering love and sex addict.
Hi, Art.
Shame just kicks my butt about every day, It's just the thing that takes me under quicker than anything and keeps me in my disease and keeps me in my compulsive acting out behavior. When I allow it to really, really cave in on me, when I don't deal with the shame and the anger and those things. I'm an incest survivor. I have a lot of sexual shame. I was incested by my father and grandfather till the age of 12. Tremendous amount of sexual shame. Intellectual shame, being abused, you're not smart enough, you're not, you know, the whole tape series there, the emotional shame, you know, you're unlovable, we don't want you around, you know, that type of thing. So I just carry tons and tons of shame. And I'm going to make this brief because I'm interested in more ways, you know, I want to hear from as many people as possible what they do to reduce the shame. I do mirror work, affirmations. I make a tape with my voice on it. I go to meetings. I call people. I do empty chair work. I don't know. So I would just, you know, I would just like to hear, you know, different ways, because this is a thing that's really, I'm going on 2 years in the program, and I'm just now really getting to the point where I'm facing off with this. I am so tired of it, you know, ruining my day and, you know, getting me down and keep, you know, and then having to drag myself up. And I really want to face off with this thing. I really want to deal with it, as I have with other issues, incest issues in my life, that type of thing. And it's extremely tough, you know, getting through this. I just get in so much pain, you know, working through that. But it's just the time of my life. I want to do it. I need to do it. And I would appreciate as much help and response as possible. So with that, I'll pass.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Steve. I'm a recovering sex and love addict.
Hi, Steve.
I grew up in a very strict Catholic environment. We went to church every Sunday, and my dad's two brothers are priests. Catholic priests, which are my uncles, and went to a Catholic grade school and Catholic high school. And I remember in second grade, a priest coming into the room and with the sister there, talking to us kids about masturbation, and they called it plain dirty. And I can remember that vividly, and it was just a guilt trip, you know, and they explained how you don't do that, it's a sin, you know, your body is a temple of God and you're abusing your body and all this. And, you know, being a normal little kid, you know, I experimented and I liked it and I became addicted to it. And, you know, I've tried to quit all through school, tried to test myself to see how long I could go without doing it. And I'd get maybe 2 weeks, and the urge would just be overbearing, and I would give in, and then you know, got hooked on pornography, and became a sex addict. And but you know, I'm trying to figure out what might have been the source of this disease, because you know, my family was not dysfunctional that I can tell. You know, my parents just celebrated their 25th anniversary, and I don't know, it'd be more than that. They're almost 30 now. But you know, not divorced. I can't recall any memories of being abused sexually or emotionally, or you know, anything like that. But you know, just a lot of shame and guilt about masturbation, and I think that's the source of my disease. That's what I'm fighting against. Thanks.
Hi, my name is John, and I'm a recovering sex and love addict from Orlando. I've been in the program in a year, and it took me about 4 months to be able to set some kind of bottom line. I could not set the bottom lines that I have recently set. The first two that I came upon were total honesty, and that means with safe people, thus the rooms. And I made a point every time I came to the room to just tell what I had just done. And so a lot of times I would act out before the meeting and did not want to act out after the meeting, but would act out after the meeting. So the next meeting I would call and tell what I'd done, or come and tell what I'd done. But the main bottom line that helped me the most was I decided that I will not, and I get emotional at this point, but I will not entertain any voices of shame from any source, especially my own mind. Mm-hmm. I will not have it from anybody ever again. Okay. So that in itself helped me tremendously in being able to have some energy and some room for recovery. And I know that recovery involves a higher power, and I have fought that, and I have not had any room for that from bad religious experiences. But now I'm finding that I do have space for that. In the last session right before we came here, it was on steps 1, 2, and 3, and that was most beneficial to me. And I'm starting to ramble, but I just wanted to say about shame, because I will not have shame. I feel guilty at times because I've done some things that I don't like to do, and I've compromised values, but I will not. I've been just as strong-willed in this as I am strong-willed in my addiction. I will not, will not, will not. And that doesn't mean I don't even think about it. It's not like a white-knuckling thing or whatever. It's just, I will not. Like, I will not murder someone. I will not entertain any shame. And I'm going to be strong-willed and stubborn about that. And that's been the basis of my recovery. And from that, I've grown into setting other bottom lines that I never thought I could ever, ever do. I could not go one day without any acting out. And then it would go maybe 3 days. And now I'm about, and this is a year later, folks, I'm only still about 2 weeks interval time. But I'm getting filled up. And as I shared in the last meeting real quickly, abstinence and sobriety is not a stopping doing something for me. A good friend shared this with me. It's not original. It's a filling up. It's a filling up of love and nurturing from y'all, from this program, and from my higher power, as I've got space for my higher power to come in and fill me. And as I'm getting filled up, I'm finding that I am just happenstance not acting out. But the bottom line for me is I will not entertain any voices of shame. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Do I need this microphone here? Are you talking
to recording it?
Okay. Hi, my name is John. I'm a sex addict.
Hi, John.
Hi. On the shame issue, I come from a Catholic family. We must have part of the market on the shame. I don't know. Large Catholic family, Catholic grade school, Catholic high school. And I have 7 older brothers and sisters, and they are, I mean, there's not one of us that's not dysfunctional to some degree or another. Alcoholics, sex addicts, drug addicts. I mean, My family's definitely dysfunctional. And my addiction of poison was the sex addiction, which I didn't really realize till about a year ago, but a tremendous amount of shame and guilt. And the sexual behavior seemed to just reemphasize the fact that I was just a shame-based person. I didn't like myself, and I'd go out and I'd act out in a very disgusting, shameful way, and it just like proven it to myself time after time. But then I got in a program, thank God, about 9 months ago, and gradually I got better and better and better, and my self-image got better, my friendships improved, my work relationship improved, my family relationships improved. I had little dips and digs like the stock market, you know, but just kind of gradually got better and better and better. And God, I started to feel really uncomfortable because I had never felt this way before. I could not consciously remember not waking up in the morning and feeling guilty and shameful and depressed and bad. And I asked to God, I mean, I enjoyed it. It was nice. It was very unusual, but it was uncomfortable. And damn, if 2 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago, I didn't go and do the most shameful and disgusting thing I've ever done in my life. And talking with my counselor about it, we talked about it for a while. I said, what in the hell was I even thinking of that I'd go and act out this way? And, you know, one of his, after talking about it for a while, he says, it just very well could be you're just so uncomfortable being in a non-shameful environment after having been in one for so long, you know, you just couldn't handle it. I don't know if that's true or not, but it definitely set me back months and months and months. But after a couple of days of being really depressed and bummed out, I said to myself, damn it, I am not going to get down on myself again because of this. I'm not going to sit there and pound myself into the dirt as a shameful and bad person, because I'm not. And ultimately and internally, I'm not a bad person, but I have some problems and I'm working on through them. But as I look back on it and say, being in shame for so long and then starting to gradually get out of shame, maybe I did. Maybe I was getting too far away from what was, quote, home and comfortable, and I couldn't handle not being in that environment again. But now I'm back and I'm sober again and I'm working it out and dealing with it. But it comes and goes. Thanks.
Thanks for coming. Yep. My name is Mary and I'm a sex and love addict. I'm really glad to be here, and I've heard a lot of good stuff from each of you. One of the things that I do to reduce shame is I have done the family tree that's in the Gentle Path that Patrick Clarence has published, and sex addiction and alcoholism and bulimia is all over my family. It's like if I weren't sexually addicted and a bulimic, there'd be something seriously wrong. And my father has sat at the dinner table and thrown up at the table. That's bulimia. And my parents were both acting out sexually when I was a small child. I knew. My mother would talk to me about how my brother was the product of my dad raping her. Before I was 5 years old, I knew all this stuff. So what else could I have become? And really and truly, only by the grace of God and by some quirk of birth, I didn't do a lot of the things I could have. And that's how I reduce shame. I also thank my addict. I embrace her. I don't need her anymore, you know, because I don't have that family craziness to deal with on a daily basis. But I thank my addict, because she helped me to survive. She got me through some horrendous times. My mother used to threaten to kill me, and my brother and my sister and I, all three of us, and she took us to the orphanage when we were very small and said, this is where you're going to live if something happens. And then every time we were bad, she'd say, that does it. You're going to the orphanage. Well, I grew up thinking I was a bad kid. And when I talked to her about that, she says, honey, all parents do that to their children. I said, I don't care. I don't like it. And, you know, and the abandonment issues, of course, how could I not have become a love addict? You don't like what I did? Well, let me make it up to you. Or, you know, and so I'm a very shame-based person, and I'm like John. I've got tears in my eyes when he said, I will not entertain thoughts of shame. I just will not do it. And I was right there with him crying along with it. And then I just want to get current real quick. On my way here, I got into my shame. And what had happened is I'm thinking about solving a problem I have, which is I have very small income. And I want to go back to, I'm thinking about how I can solve that. So I'm just talking about what I can do. So I was telling my stepmother today, I have a very good relationship with her, that I'm thinking about going to law school. I'm thinking, well, if Hillary Rodham Clinton can do it, so can I. And I could do a lot of good. I'm very smart, and I'm a humanitarian person. And just the thought of entertaining that, I got into, who do you think you are to think you could go to law school? Who do you think you are to think you could be a lawyer? And I got into it on the way here, and I wanted to do something to relieve the shame, and I'm so glad I got here. When I walked in this room, I was eaten up with it, and then after I heard you guys starting to talk, I thought, oh good, phew, I'm in the right place. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Bob. I'm a recovering sex and love addict.
Hi, Bob.
Guilt and shame are something I've always carried with me. And from a very early age, I was convinced that I was different because I was told that I was different. I was told that I was better than, you're the most wonderful thing in the world, and why aren't you better, kind of a thing. I was an only child. There was no drinking or drug use or any of that kind of stuff in the family, but there was something weird because I turned out weird. My particular choice in this particular addiction has been masturbation, sex with myself from about the age of 8 to the exclusion of every other kind of sex. Now, I've been married for 43 years. Imagine what a woman feels like when she discovers that her husband is more fond sexually of himself than he is of her. A whole lot of shame and a whole lot of guilt. But it's been over 3 years in this program, plus a whole lot of other outside work, and what's happening is that the shame about who I am, I think, is going away. And I attribute to that partly to by trying to work the steps as best I can, and partly to the 12th promise, which we don't talk about much in this program, but we do in other programs. And the 12th promise is that God will be doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And I absolutely believe that's happening with my shame. With guilt, it's something else. I feel guilty because of what I did to my wife, or rather, you could almost put it, what I didn't do to my wife. I was deprived of what we call a normal sex life. I deprived her of what you could call a normal sex life. And it's only been recently that I discovered that I did some abusive things to my daughter, who was 39, had never been married, and never had a relationship. And that I carry guilt about. That what I did to my wife and to my daughter, I carry guilt about that. I have tried to make amends. Apparently, these people are not ready to receive the amends. That's okay. I can live with this. What's happened, actually, is that this is a consequence of my actions, and that's there, and it will always be there. And maybe it's just a good reminder to me of the fact that I did screw up badly, and that I don't have to act that way anymore. But the idea of shame being reduced by doing the steps and sharing myself, this is a new idea as of this meeting here. So yeah, it's amazing how fast this stuff takes hold. Thank you, I bet.
Thank you.
Hello, everybody. My name is Doug. I'm a sex and love addict.
Hi, Doug.
It's really good to hear everything that everybody has to say. You know, I grew up with shame. I think everybody has here. But, shame was used in my family as a whip to keep me in line and for me to do and perform how they wanted me to be for their own ends and purposes. And out of that came a legacy, a family legacy of a lot of shame. Everything in my life was motivated by shame and fear. Everything. It was like not what I wanted, but you know, what it wouldn't do for other people and what I deserved. Messages like that. It was really, really shame-based. Everything. And you know, today when I deal with shame, it's to come to meetings like this and a lot of other meetings and tell you who I am and what I do. You know, the getting current, you know, part of the SLAA meetings is just a wonderful shame-busting process. And And I love that portion because it really, you know, I can go without the fear, tell you who I am and what's going on for me, no matter how bad it is. And that busts the shame. And, you know, when I carry shame from my past, I need to tell you real loud that I have shame, because my shame doesn't want to be seen. It hides. It hides in the most precarious places. It's like, it's so elusive that it, you know, even now thinking here and listening to other people share about shame, I'm picking up ideas where I was motivated to behave and share with other people in a shaming way. You know? And so as it comes to consciousness, I almost feel shame about having shame. But I have to tell you, I have shame, and I act in it. But my recovery is staying there less than I used to. You know, I can't come in and make any great claims that I don't have it anymore. Man, it's there and it comes up. And thanks to this fellowship and other fellowships and the steps and the higher power that I have a new relationship with, I'm able to see it sooner. And I did a long fourth step, and I know, you know, how I operate and how I function, and I know how my fear comes up and how my shame expresses itself, so I can change it. You know, my shame is now an option today, and not a compulsion. That's a major change for me. My life is getting better, and it is ups and downs, but it's not as bad as it was before. And it's like it's life. You know, the program doesn't promise to take away any pain. It just says we can deal with it. It means it's still going to be there. And I used to feel shame about having pain. It's like everything, absolutely everything had shame under it. Everything, you know. So I'm telling you about it. That's how I deal with it. So, thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Lorraine, a sex and love addict.
Hi, Lorraine.
I could most possibly feel shame after I finish speaking right now. One of the things my therapist told me to do was, when I'm done speaking, to say inside my head, that was okay, that was good, no matter what I said. And I guess that's kind of one of the things I have to do when I know that what I'm doing is okay and it's good for me. I have to affirm that. And all of you, you know, help me do that, and my sponsor helps me do that. I've had a lot of pain in recovery, like probably you have. And what I feel has happened is that no emotion that I've felt has been as painful as the shame I felt around it. And that's why I didn't want to tell about it. You know, it was so bad to feel that way. It was so awful to be the person I am and have those feelings. And so that's another thing I've done, is talk about those feelings and talk about the fact that I have shame about it. Because I have shame about everything. Somebody else said that I know now that both my parents were very shame-based people, and how could I not get their shame from them? You know, they did the best they could, but they were who they were. And my father died this year, active in his addiction, and I don't know what my mother's doing now, but she's surviving. I learned from her that I needed to be very rigid and very controlling. And everything had to be according to how I wanted it, or else I couldn't feel safe. And in recovery, I'm trying slowly to get that balance, you know, to swing back to letting go and letting God and letting go and letting people. And that's really hard. And I have a lot of shame about that. You know, I thought I was the only person that was so controlling and so rigid. So it helps so much to go to meetings and to be in therapy and share the innermost horrible, terrible things I think that are only me, when I find out then that other people really share them. One of the hardest things I did, I guess, was in my therapy group. It's an all-women therapy group, and my therapist had me do a sexual inventory. About 12 women were there, and I'm really close with them, and I'm really intimate with them. But I almost didn't get through it. I almost didn't get through it. I had so much shame about, you know, who I was and what I had to do. And, and the other thing I wanted to say was just that before I came to the meeting, I'm having a really good time here. I'm local, so I have a lot of really close friends here. And my friendships are so much different than before. I never was capable of any intimacy, of course. And when I let people know me sometimes, especially kind of newer people, I get ashamed, you know, because, oh gosh, I really showed them who I was. And I had an attack, and I told myself I was going to my room to, I don't know what. And I was going to my room, I realized that I was feeling ashamed. So I'm really grateful that I can recognize the feeling now a lot of the time I never could before. Mm. Thanks for being here.
Hi, I'm Michael, sex and love addict.
Hi, Michael.
And it's real good to be here. It's real good to hear everyone talk so far. I have a lot of feelings, you know, inside me and messages that are feelings or messages of shame or guilt. Some of the stuff that comes to me right away is just how I, you know, the thing, memories from as early in my childhood as I can recall, you know, like 6 years old or so, I remember trying to get help with homework from my father, and I would get the math answer wrong, and he would give me a stern no, you know, and tell me that I knew the answer now, what is it? And as I got the answer wrong more and more, he became more and more physical and more angry. His fist started slamming down on the table, and of course tears are coming to my eyes, and the message I got from that is I must be really stupid, because I don't know this answer. I mean, my father would not inherently do anything to hurt me, so it must be me. You know? So those are, and so I grew up with those feelings that I'm a really bad person. And I also had the feelings that, you know, the same type of thing, you know, I would not get the attention or the acceptance or the approval or whatever that I needed. And so the interpretation was that I'm obviously not working hard enough to get it. So I learned that I'm really stupid, and I'm also not worthy of having anyone around me. And I was very ashamed of that. I grew up thinking I'm a very defective person, and if anyone finds out what I'm really like, they're all going to leave me. And I also learned that I can't make it by myself. That's what I was told. So everyone's going to leave me, and I'm going to die a slow and painful death. And it wasn't as intellectual as that, but there was a lot of fear. So I grew up with, as I grew up, I collected more and more incidents that I felt shame about, because I, you know, it just went that way. I mean, I won't try to analyze it. So of course, as I got older, there were more and more secrets that I had. So I was more and more ashamed and more guilty, and that it just progressed. And of course, you know, in order to handle all this pain and try to survive, I would, you know, pick up all sorts of behaviors, of which, you know, sex and love was a real important part. As far as working to get through guilt and shame, the first thing was talking about it, you know, realizing that I'm not alone. I mean, that's incredible. That's incredible help for me. But I also acknowledge that there's a lot of this shame that I feel that I don't have any connection to. I just feel it's there. It just feels like very deep rooted, you know, and it just comes out, and it's automatic for me to believe it, and this is what I do, and I treat myself that way. You know, so I guess I don't have an answer for how to get through that, but I know that I need to talk to people, I need to not be alone, I know that if I stay with myself for an extended period of time, I'm just going to get more and more into the negative messages, into the shame, and into isolation, and back into my acting out. And I do know that a real important part of my process, is as difficult as it is for me, is working through the steps, absolutely. Doing the first, second, and third step, and then doing my formal fourth step for the first time, and the fifth step, I mean, actually sharing this with someone else, and hopefully also with God and myself, as the step says, I mean, that's very cathartic. That's finally getting the baggage out. And I want to, you know, and then dealing with the guilt, you know, through making a list of people that I need to make amends to, and going through that. So that's something I'm still on the path. I haven't yet completed it, and it seems really difficult. But you know, I want to get better. You know, I definitely feel that if I'm not moving forward, I'm moving backwards, and I don't want to fall back into the traps that I was in before. I definitely, it's a daily process for me, and it's, you know, it's a daily process for me to try to take care of myself, to give myself positive messages, to give myself positive things, and feel that I'm worthy of good things, and not worthy of shame or abuse. But those are the messages I have. Those are the old messages, and it's easy for me to fall back on those. And a big awareness as far as that is concerned was I just came up on a year anniversary of sobriety in this program on April 6th. And about a week beforehand, I was talking to someone on the phone and got really scared, because I realized not only am I coming up on my anniversary, but I'm also going to be qualifying in a big meeting on my anniversary. And I started to get really scared, and that was the first time I started to really get concerned as to whether I was going to be able to make it to a year. And then what I started to realize was there was a real strong feeling inside of me that didn't deserve this, you know, because my recovery for me is one of the most powerful and most positive things that I've been able to give myself, you know. So to be able to see how important it's been for other people to have, an extended period of time and an anniversary over that, and just to see how important that's becoming for me, to have sat there and really have an awareness of, shit, this is really difficult. It really gave me a much clearer picture of some of the self-hatred tendencies of self-destruction that I have, and I don't want those anymore, you know. So I'm really grateful to be here. Thanks.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Anonymous. Anonymous. Sex addict. I want to thank everybody for the sharing. I've learned that my guilt and shame has started when I was very young, in my early childhood. And my belief system has grown to make it real for me. But what I'd like to share here is that today I know in my recovery that it's not who I am, and that I'm not a bad person, irrespective of all the guilt and shame that my belief system is aware of. And through these rooms and the meetings, I am growing and changing, and I am okay today. So that's all I wanted to share. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Cecil. I'm a sex and love addict.
Thank you, Cecil.
I know somehow, through the grace of God or whatever, that I'm a good person. And my life has been one long attempt to prove otherwise. I was raised in Oklahoma, and Catholicism doesn't predominate, but another brand of Christianity does, and it was equally guilt and shame producing. that's just one factor. I recognize my parents as another factor, and really identify with a lot that's been said of the things that influenced me. But I also recognize that I'm responsible for some of that, and I don't know if that's right. I'm still confused about a lot of this, but I can look at my brothers and sisters or people who were raised in similar circumstances and they didn't react the same way. So sometimes I think I'm extra sensitive or susceptible to being shamed. But whatever the reasons are, it started from misbehaving in school to somewhere along the line got interested in women and girls at that time in junior high school, and looking and doing and thinking things that made me feel like I was a bad person. And it went through a progression of alcohol and drugs and vandalizing and stealing. And the funny thing is that I through all this, I realized that I am a good person, and I was never able to do things that were real evil or mean to people. And I feel good about that. But it's funny how all of my actions, and I did a long fourth step, and it just became real clear to me that I've done everything I can to prove that I'm a piece of shit, and I'm not able to do real bad things, but it's just been a whole lot of little trivial bullshit, just every little thing that I'm pushing it as far as what this person right here can do. I can't do very evil things because I'm not an evil person, but I tried in a lot of ways to do bad things, those voices, and I felt a lot of emotion when you said that you will not entertain those voices of shame, and that's got right to the core of my addiction, and that's exactly what I need to do. And I've heard people say that they're thankful to be in these groups, and I've said it, but I'm feeling that right now more than I ever have.
I'm Jerry, recovering sex and love addict.
Hi, Jerry.
I came into shame, as many of you who have shared did. I can recall sometimes the words weren't spoken, but other times the words were just said. You should be ashamed of that, of yourself. You should be ashamed of yourself. So I was a good learner, and I took it on. Being healed of guilt and shame, I think, has come to me in various ways. Some of them have been mentioned already. Being a member of this fellowship, saying that I'm a recovering sex and love addict has been... has lifted a lot of the shame and the guilt. Being responsible and working the steps, making amends. When I was responsible for what I had done, I didn't feel as guilty. Disclosure. Being a kid that learned that I needed to make a good impression and becoming a sex addict, somehow I had to live at least two lives doing that. And I did, till coming into this program. Probably the most helpful thing I've learned in having shame healed is just opening myself to the love that others have for me. And that has happened in this fellowship. Also the love that my higher power has for me. It's been recommended to me, I've heard it, and it really works. When I remember to do it, is whatever I'm feeling, if it's shame, or if it's joy, or if it's sadness, or fear, I can at any given moment open myself at that moment to my higher power who is with me, who loves me today in recovery, but not any more intensely than he loved me when I was acting out. Always accepting, always loving. And so for me, the healing does come from my higher power through other people, but also one-on-one when I open myself to a particular mood or feeling that I have. And it's working. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Ed. I'm a recovering person. I first need to acknowledge my inner child. My inner child wants to say, hi, Terry, it's your mom. You didn't talk. But there's a couple of things that I heard that brought up a lot of stuff for me here. I think some of my shame in the past has always been around anger and rage. I used to do a lot of anger and rage stuff. And I can still hear my father telling me that someday my anger is going to get me in trouble. And but something I heard one time, and I internalized it, was that, and it was a good internalization, was that anger was always about something I was either trying to control and couldn't, or something that I was losing control of. And when Carlos was talking before, it brought a lot of that up for me. I see people on television talking about these things, and I want to grab the TV and shake them and say, you're crazy, you're looking at it all wrong. I just, you know, and it helps me every time I start to get angry now just to know, or to ask myself, what is it I'm trying to control, or what is it I don't have any control of? And it really puts me in touch with, you know, my powerlessness. And the other thing that has helped me a whole lot is getting in touch with my defects of character. Because all of my shame has always been about not wanting to be who I really am and not wanting to face who I really am. And so I find today that my higher power, the only thing that my higher power asks of me is to just be accepting of everything that is. And when I do that, I don't have to think about controlling something or having or trying to control. I still do those things. There's my human side of me that gets into all that stuff. But I always try to keep in mind to just be accepting of what is, the situation, something I can't change no matter what it is. And my anger and rage has diminished. It's hard to say. I don't want to put a number on it, but a whole lot. It doesn't come up for me very much at all. And the more accepting I am of what is, the more accepting I am of myself with my defects of character. And I can say things, and I can say things inappropriately, and I can apologize for them. And I'm not as apologizing as much as I used to be, because I used to have to do an awful lot. But that's part of me too, and I'm trying to learn about a whole new person. A person who is willing to change, a person who is willing to work a change and still accept my defects and move on. Thanks.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Rita. I'm a sex and love addict.
Hi, Rita.
Hi, Rita.
I guess this is a good place to share it as well as anywhere else. I have a lot of guilt. It's shame and guilt, it's both, at acting out sexually while I was still married. And this happened about 3 years ago. I'm divorced about 2 years, and I still carry the guilt and the shame, and I have not been able to forgive myself. I have a lot of anger and a lot of rage. As soon as it happens, as far as I was concerned, the marriage was over, and divorce was, you know, the only way out. I have a lot of anger that I carry around with me because of it, and a lot of it is towards myself, but a lot of it is it's directed outward, you know, towards men and towards women. It'll just come out, you know. I have a fear of getting into another relationship or having men as friends because of it. Allowing myself to feel like I deserve to get re-involved again because of it. I don't want to talk to my ex-husband. He triggers my rage. because I'm probably angry at him for it also. I don't blame him 100% for the fact that I acted out, but basically in my marriage I was, I guess, anorexic. Had a very dysfunctional relationship, was not able to, didn't know that I wasn't having my sexual needs met. I was not really in touch with that part of the relationship and kind of denied it and ignored it for the length of the marriage. And I also carry a lot of shame and guilt from my childhood, shame and guilt that probably isn't mine at all, you know, for being sexually abused. And for the dysfunction in my family, the rage in my family, my father's rage, my mother's mental illness, and I think that I, to this day, carry the shame and the guilt of it, and feeling responsible for it, and not feeling that I deserve anything in my life, that I deserve to be happy or to be that I deserve a relationship with a man that's terrific, you know, great, or whatever, you know. And I shy away from it, too. And I deny myself a lot. I deny myself accomplishing things, accomplishing goals, like getting my education, or I get anorexic with food. I deny myself eating properly, to eat properly, or to... it's taken me a whole year of abstinence from this addiction to... feel that I deserve to get well. I'm in therapy, and but I don't want to die from this disease. I don't want to attempt suicide anymore. I deserve to live. You know, and it's very hard for me to be anywhere around my ex-husband. Very, very hard for me. Talking to my brother the other night, and he feels that I should confront my ex-husband and deal with the situation for my children's sake. But I'm afraid of him. I'm afraid I'll kill him. I'm afraid. I always think that I'm afraid of my ex-husband. It's me I'm afraid of. I'm afraid of the violence and the rage that's in me, that I will kill him for denying me many, many years of my life, for telling me no and rejecting me and listening to my for not owning any of his own stuff, for blaming me for that everything, that I was a sick person, that everything was my fault, you know. And I'm tired of carrying the anger around with me. This is not the place to vent anger or to vent any of it. But I do need to say that I carry a lot of anger with me, a lot of anger, in addition to the shame and the guilt. You know, I think the anger and the feelings that I have deep inside are a result of the shame and the guilt that I carry around with me. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Joan, recovering from sex and love addiction. And I'm also a recovering Catholic, recovering non-liberated woman. I've been listening to a lot of things that have been said today about messages that we've all received about ourselves. And for me, I've received a lot of messages from a Catholic background and also from a perfectionistic workaholic father and a rageaholic mother. And they've done a real number on me most of my life. The problem is I didn't know it did a number on me. I spent most of my life acting out and didn't know I was acting out. I spent most of my life shame-based and I didn't know I was shame-based. Today, as of the time that I've been in this program, it's not quite a year, I'm a different person, and I'm so grateful to these rooms for the amount of healing and blessing that I've received from coming into these rooms. I find that I can sit here and say to my roommates, I'm tired. I'm not ashamed that I'm tired. Even that's a big deal for me. Years ago, it was a big deal to say I'm tired. I need to take care of myself. And I need to take care of myself. And that's another reason I've come to these meetings, is just to take care of myself physically, emotionally, spiritually. It's a real big step for me, even just to talk about those kind of issues and say I'm worth it. And I heard Karen saying earlier about that deep core inside, the part of me that never really received the love and the nurturing that I needed to get. And that's what my shame is all about, is understanding I have a little girl in me that needs to get those things. And I'm going to set out to try to do that here in these rooms. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank
you. We have time for one more burning desire before we close.
You're going to send it to everyone. There's nothing after this.
Sure. Hi, I'm Steven. I'm a sex addict.
Hi, Steve.
I just learned something very important that's interesting, that this particular meeting has to deal with how do you take care of the shame and the guilt. And the last meeting I was in was the first meeting ever that I have shared some incidents in my childhood that I'm ashamed about. And I'm learning that whatever I feel ashamed about is to hear myself say those things to a group of people like yourself, and chances are I feel you'll accept it and accept me, and to also hear myself say that I'm okay with what's happened and what I've done, because I'm not doing those things anymore, because I'm on a path of recovery and it's going to get better. And just to keep saying these things over and over, however many times it takes, because there's things that, as you mentioned, that there's things that I've done probably in my life that I don't know that I'm even ashamed about, but there's some things that I do know I'm ashamed about, that I've got to get those things out of the way in order to uncover those deeper issues that are still holding me back from being the full potential that God has intended me to be. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
My name's Al. I'm a sex addict.
Hi, Al. Hi, Al.
I grew up in a family that used shame as a control. They controlled me and my brother, simply by making us feel guilty. You should be shameful of what you did to your mother by not eating, or you should be shameful about not doing so well in college because your father's helping you with your college. And it was just always, you know, now that they had responsibilities as parents, is that we should, you know, just feel that if we do something wrong, that it's just really something terrible, and, you know, how could we even consider doing something like that? And, you know, don't even consider doing something that might bring shame to the family. It was just complete control constantly. And unfortunately, even after being in this program over 2 years, I still am controlled by shame, you know. I'm a very shame-based person. I can remember things that happened to me in junior high that I'm still so shameful about. And I remember in the fourth grade, I was washing my hands. I was going to go wash my hands in the bathroom, and there was a bunch of guys in front of me, and I pushed my way through, and another teacher grabbed me from the back and said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm just pushing myself, you know, pushing up to wash my hands." And she took me to my Bates teacher and told her, and I just remember just crying that, you know, I had done something wrong. And to me, that was shame, because it, you know, it was just going back to real basic feelings that I did something wrong and how shameful that was. Looking at the word shame, it's only a 5-letter word, but if you put the S between the A and the M, it spells out 2 words, and it spells out has me. And I'm still there. Shame still has me. And I know that in my recovery, I have to change my idea of that. And I need to go forward. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks.
I'm Larry. I'm a sex and love addict.
Hi, Larry.
And I'm still increasing my awareness of shame. every time I think about it, I seem to pick up something new. I know that it's almost impossible for me to talk to somebody and look at them when I'm talking. I normally talk into the floor. My first experience with sex was shameful. I remember being ashamed about sex when I was 5. My first memories of being a separate person are that I'm defective. And as so many of you have said, my parents used shame as a control. So I felt not loved and not lovable and not good enough. Not good enough to spend time with, not good enough to take care of. And I don't need those people to tell me I'm not any good anymore. I do it myself. And when I think about it, I think I've been doing it for myself for a long time, and that makes the tapes harder to stop. Because they play automatically now. And I can remember stuff back to preschool days that I'm still ashamed of. And I don't know how to get rid of it. I know that a lot of what's wrong with me is the shame that I carry around, and the fact that it just keeps building because I keep generating it myself. And I think it's a supreme irony that since I was so ashamed of sex even when I was 5, that's what I got addicted to. Because I have felt ashamed about sex ever since, with people I liked and didn't like, with people I loved and didn't love, with myself. Every sexual experience is shameful. And I like what you said about I refuse to be shamed anymore. I don't know how long I have to say that to myself to believe it, but I want to believe it. Thanks.
Thank you.
My name is David. I'm a sex and love addict.
Hi, David.
I'm also the child of a sex and love addict, or of two sex and love addicts, and I'm a third generation sex and love addict. And talking about shame, a lot of my shame as a child wasn't mine. It was other people's shame that they threw on me. A lot of the low self-esteem and shame that I felt was caused by my parents and thrown at me, and then I learned it. And as an adult, as I've heard here today in the meeting, very much like my situation, I learned to shame myself better than anybody could ever shame me once I got the hang of it. What I want to share is not so much the shame and the guilt, but how I'm dealing with the shame and the guilt, because I think that really, that hope, strength, and experience can help others. I am in the process of packing up my parents' shame and giving it back to them. I'm in the process of filling that bag with all of their stuff that they gave to me that is not mine, that I have carried for 30 some odd years, that I am no longer required to carry around in my life. It is not mine, it is theirs. And whether they choose to deal with it or how they deal with it is not my problem. What is my problem is to not take responsibility for that which is not mine, and to take responsibility for that which is mine. And I am going to go to therapy with them and bring the bags. And I'm going to deliver the bags. And what they do from that point is theirs. I am also going to own my shame. I do that in therapy. I do that in my everyday life. And I will do that with my family, and have done so. I have shame for molesting my sister. I have shame for cheating on my wife. I have shame for lying and living a double life. The way I deal with that shame is by acknowledging my addiction, and that I didn't do it intentionally to hurt anybody. I did it, first of all, because I saw it at home, and I thought that's how everybody lived. That's the first thing I can say. And the second thing is I did it to survive. And I have to stop beating myself up over it, or I'm going to continue to find a way to hurt myself with it. And working the fourth and fifth step and sharing that inventory with someone and those shameful events, and then owning my character defects, and thereafter working the eighth and ninth step and making amends to people where possible, is my way of dealing with my shame and being responsible for my activities. And I believe that through working the steps, we come to grips with our actions. The actions that I did do not go away. I can't change the hurt that I caused to my wife or to my sisters or to my parents. What I can do is find a way to move forward and to move beyond it so that I don't dig the hole deeper and go further into the hole, but that I find a way to literally make my own ladder and get out of the hole. And I can say now that I'm working on getting out of the hole. And as I get closer to the light, I can say that part of what helps me go up rung by rung on the ladder is letting go of all of the things that were thrown on me and that were burying me that aren't mine. And many of us have the shame of others that we have carried for generations, and we're not required to carry it. Thanks.
Thank you.